Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. I made Andy look over at me. Did he break? Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich. How's it going, Andy?
It's always such a joy to be here, John.
Well, I'm glad
John is operating on pure black coffee.
Yeah. No Monster, no Altoids. That's proven to not be very much fun. Thank you, Jeff Gonzalez. For those that missed it, I'm doing a Paleo Purge Challenge with Jeff Gonzalez from Trident Concepts, competing for charity. Very sad to hear the passing of Gary Welt, former Navy SEAL, who was stricken with ALS. Passed away this last week. That was actually the gentleman that Jeff was competing for. His charity will continue, though. That money going to go to help Gary's family. I'm competing for RampageForTheCure.org. Very nice cancer charity. Anyway, tonight's show is going to be really, really cool. We're going to have Dr. Sherman House on. No, not the Dr. House, but the much more awesome and badass, can I say that? Oh, I did.
He's a badass.
All right. He's cool. He fits into the archetypical gunfighter dentist type, which I know sounds funny, but there's actually been a lot of them. Anyway, Doc Holliday, anybody? So that's going to be a cool show. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. Anyway, we're going to get Dr. House on the line in just a minute. A couple things to cover real quick. And I didn't really tell Andy I was going to bring it up or not, but I'm sure everyone's been following the Bureau of Land Management fiasco out west. I've briefly talked about it on Facebook. I don't think that I have enough information to really, really comment the way that I would like to. So I'm not going to say very much other than I'm really glad that no one has been injured so far, and I hope that that trend continues and that cooler heads prevail. So and people quit doing shady things like, oh, I don't know, sell land to China without saying anything about it. Anyway, enough of that. See, that's venturing too close from the realm of politics, which I mostly do a good job of avoiding. So I'm going to continue to do that. What else? Surpassed 3,000 rounds on the FNS9 long slide, and the gun is working really, really well, actually, since having been coated and also since we made the single-sided mag release. Not had any more issues, so and I'm actually starting to get passably good with it. I was going to get to take a class with it this weekend, but unfortunately that class was canceled. So I went into my backyard instead, which was a lot of fun. Anyway, other than that, oh, there's more stuff, but honestly, Dr. House is more interesting than I am, so let's get him on the line. We got another 4 minutes left. Joining us this evening, Dr. Sherman House. Doc, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, perfect. I appreciate you taking your Sunday evening to come onto the show and talk with us about things. I know your time is your time is often short, but for those that don't know, and you're kind of interesting because you're involved in the industry, but not as many people are familiar with you. Which I think is intentional on your part and is probably a lot more intelligent than what I've done. But for those that don't know, why don't you go over your background just a little bit, introduce yourself, please.
All right. Well, going back to the beginning, I originally had an interest in the tactical industry through the Police Explorers, you know, a program through the Boy Scouts of America. And that was in the late 80s and early 90s, and I kind of, you know, worked my way into the system through that, and then shortly, you know, after, because that's, you know, a program that's primarily intended for people that are, you know, high school age, And then, you know, the idea was that you would, you know, work your way up to being like an auxiliary or a reserve, and or, you know, go on further in law enforcement. And I ended up getting an associate's degree in law enforcement through the local community college, and then had work in the security industry, you know, basically just doing the kind of stuff that everybody does to punch their card through, you know, like being a night watchman was the first big one that I had. And I did the night watchman gig at a resort in La Conner, Washington, in Northwest Washington State for a while, and then ended up responding to an ad that I saw in the want ads for an armored truck guard, and started that. And then that was April of 96, and did that actually through 2005. And all the while I was, you know, going to school, collecting degrees, and then I also worked in the fire service and EMS because, you know, they have kind of a you know, the fire service has sort of a bizarre work schedule. You know, where I was at, it was like 2 days on, 5 days off.
Right.
So you find yourself with a lot of free time. And you know, if you're somebody that is really busy all the time, you know, I don't like to have that much free time. So
yeah.
I just kind of found myself like doing all of these two jobs and then doing, you know, other things in addition to that, and training and shooting. And then when I actually moved to Tennessee in 2005, I ended up hooking up with James Yeager and the guys at Tactical Response in Camden, Tennessee. And, you know, we just, you know, took off as great friends right from the start, and started training with them, took about every class that they offered. And I'd already taken classes on the West Coast from, you know, a few different people. And police officers, you know, that were, you know, that back in those days, I mean, firearms training was still very much following the NRA type guidelines,
right,
you know, for basic pistol and home defense, and vehicle, kind of format. So it wasn't anything too
radical,
dramatic. Right. Yeah. It was very practical, very metered, and you know, very scholastic almost. And
right. I'm gonna interrupt you just real quick, only because we're coming up on the break. But when we get back, we'll hear some more about things you've done in the past, and get into the meat of the show, which should actually upset some people, or maybe even seem counter to some things I've said in the past. But anyway, more with Dr. House when we get back. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes are so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. You got Eric, the producer, in the booth, playing some good tunes this show. Thanks, Eric. I appreciate that. Anyway, quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. And we've been talking with Dr. Sherman House. I'm going to get him back on the line. So you were talking about getting hooked up with James Yeager at Tactical Response, and how some of the it's really interesting to me. Not many people really understand how lucky we are to have the options that we have in this day and age as far as the trainers go. You know, it's funny to me because, you know, it's almost like you can't throw a rock without hitting a tactical firearms trainer these days, it seems like. Which isn't a bad thing, but there were not nearly as many options 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but anyway, so you got hooked up with them.
Yeah, and then, you know, also ended up meeting, you know, people in the local manufacturing and firearms industry here in Middle Tennessee, and then went to work for James originally as his medical program director. And then I, you know, cross-trained in firearms, and I did primarily, you know, rifle, well, you know, like home defense, you know, vehicle defense, civil defense type rifle work, and then shotgun, of course, and pistol. So I didn't really do too much of the contractor training. Although I did take the classes, I never really instructed that much other than to do the medical modules, just because I never worked, you know, overseas doing that kind of stuff. So all of the, you know, the security contract work that I did was just in the armored truck industry, which is, you know, basically just driving around with a Mini 14 and the shotgun and get to point A to point B, and you know, not get jacked.
Right.
So
right. So and I mentioned it earlier, but so you're a doctor now. You actually do dentistry, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Also some forensic dentistry, I believe.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's correct. Forensic odontology is the proper term for it, and it's the forensic identification of human remains through dental records.
Right, right. Well, and the reason why I brought that up was because we're going to get to talking about a couple different things, and I wanted to make it clear, you've seen quite a few dead bodies in your day, and just establishing the particulars there. So
yeah.
We've run into you a couple times now, but we ran into each other out at the 2014 Tactical Field and Medicine Conference that Caleb at Lone Star Medics put on, and we were discussing Polypalooza 2, which is going to come up this August, and we'll talk about that in the next segment or two. But I had asked you what you were teaching. You said that you were going to be teaching a thing about 22s for home defense for people with impairments. And I actually thought that'd be an interesting thing to talk about for a couple different reasons. Anybody that's spent a lot of time around me in the past will probably remember me saying things like, well, you know, I don't recommend a 22 for self-defense. I don't recommend a 22 for self-defense. And while I still don't recommend it for a first choice, I've really kind of come around a little bit. I thought it would be an interesting discussion to have. So, I mean, if you don't mind...
Sure.
Why would somebody be interested in a 22 for home defense compared to a high-capacity 9mm handgun or maybe a 5.56 rifle or a 12 or 20-gauge shotgun?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the whole impetus behind it was, you know, as you well know, we run the Polypalooza conference very much in line with the TPI paradigm, you know, which is the Total Protection Interactive.
Right.
Paradigm, and we, you know, we could have a whole two-hour show just about what that is. But it's, if I had to boil it down to something, I'd say that it is a way to come up with an interesting solution to a problem that is thought out and very particular and metered, but it's almost treated in the same way that you would treat a hypothesis to a scientific conundrum.
Right.
And the conundrum was, you know, like if you have a person that is, you know, not as physically able as you or I, John, but, you know, like perhaps a young, you know, preteen 10-year-old or, you know, somebody that is very arthritic or somebody that is very old or even, you know, a very small framed woman, you know, they, while everybody says, you know, oh, the 12 gauge or the 20 gauge, you know, with training can be used. Well, sure, it can, but... you know, it's an intimidating prospect, and you know, doing a combat shotgun or a fighting shotgun class over the course of a weekend, you know, for a small framed person or someone that is not physically able, that's not going to be fun.
No, it's
going to be abusive, and yeah, exactly, and you know, they're going to be wrecked by the time the thing's over, and they're probably going to have, you know, continued anxiety from ever having to utilize that thing.
Right.
And, well, everybody...
I was going to say, just to interrupt real quick, I think something that is lost on a lot of the people that are in our circle, and I know it certainly was lost on me in the past, and I'm sort of kind of understanding it a little bit better as I get to talk with more people. Not everybody wants to train as much as we do. Not everybody thinks it's fun.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's real easy to say, well, that's a training issue or that's something that can be overcome with training. At a certain point, you almost have to make the assumption that the majority of the people that I try and instruct and or help aren't going to seek any training. So,
correct.
And I just kind of wanted to bring that up as another point. But anyway, please continue.
The situation that I, you know, came up with was I have a son that is young, and I wanted him. He's quite proficient with firearms, and he's been around them his whole life. And I thought, what if he comes home from school and takes the bus home from school and is at home when there's like a home invasion? And it kind of made me think about that, because if you remember about 6 months ago, it seemed like there was three specific incidences where there was a kid, that was between the ages of like 9 and 14,
right,
that, had to defend the home because the parents weren't there, from, some type of attacker.
Right.
And I thought, boy, like, he's so proficient with this 10/22, how could we kind of develop this 10/22 into a little bit of a program that is easy for anybody to get and pick it up in just a few hours of training, and have it be, still be fun and not abusive, and but still be effective and still have the terminal effectiveness that would allow you to have all of the benefits, obviously, in a situation like that.
Right.
So that was my hypothesis, and so I came up with a program to go along with that, and I borrowed a lot from Claude Werner and then Greg Elifritz from TDI.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then also the shooting standard that I used was the the 5x5x5 drill that Kathy Jackson at the Cornered Cat came up with. I believe it was, maybe it was Gila Hayes, but I don't recall which. But anyway, it's, five rounds at 5 yards in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So it's, a time standard. And, with these, you don't have to use a Ruger 10/22 takedown. I mean, that's what I use in the model, just because it's a, they're pretty readily available, and everybody likes to feel like Jason Bourne when they're putting the rifle together, And, but I mean, you could just as easily use, a Marlin, Model 60 or whatever they sell at Bass Pro for $150.
Right.
And achieve the same result, just a semi-automatic 22, whether it's tube fed or magazine fed.
Right.
So that was my thought process. And now that 22 ammo has been, bulk 22 ammo has been so scarce, at least here in Middle Tennessee, the thing that I've noticed is that the premium 22 ammo, like the CCI mini mags and stingers and velocitors and things like this, were still, very much available. And so, I bought that stuff just, to have, and then I actually shot it and then looked at some of the ballistic testing for it. And I thought, like, one of these rounds, it doesn't obviously meet the FBI 12-inch penetration criteria,
right,
but it comes close. It's, 12 inches with the denim.
Mm-hmm.
10 inches with the denim, but it, it still has potential. And so I thought, take that and put that into the 5x5x5, and you could still, really put at least a decent amount of hurt on somebody if you had good shot placement.
Right. Well, that was actually an interesting conversation that I had with Chuck Haggard at one point, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
As far as, and I'm sure you know Chuck, but we were talking about the FBI shooting, and I don't know how we came up, but he's like, do you think they would have traded their revolvers for a couple of Ruger 10/22s with red dot sights on them? And just real quick, we did have a caller call in with a question. They didn't stay on the line, but they did ask in Cincinnati, if you can't take a concealed carry class with a 22, that is false. You can take it with whatever you want. Some places don't allow you to take it with a 22, but
most offer that.
Most offer that. Honestly, if someone will limit you and not say, or say, hey, don't use a 22, I wouldn't give them my money because they're kind of retarded. Anyway, and that's my official position on that. And if they have a problem with that, they can call into the station right now, 513-749-5500. Anyway, please continue. We've got about a minute left. So 5x5 standards, and then we'll go to break, and we'll get back.
Yeah, so the whole crux of my program was that I could, you know, train somebody, whether they were a child or someone that is a relatively, you know, new novice shooter, to this 5x5x5 standard with a Ruger 10/22, and have them be, you know, basically preparation effective, but also have fun, and, you know, it almost treat it like as if I was teaching them how to use a fire extinguisher.
Right.
You know, this is what you use for this type of emergency, and this is how you do it. And here's the 5x5x5 standard. And if we can do this every time with, you know, good results, then I think that is a good amount of preparedness for that type of situation.
Right. We'll discuss that a little bit more, just because it's kind of funny, because I've sort of come full circle on this a couple times now. But when we get back, more about 22s for self-defense with Dr. House. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you're looking to protect yourself or are a first-time gun buyer, competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. Anyway, we are talking with Dr. Sherman House right now about his program that he's come up with to train people on 22 caliber rifles for home defense. People that are maybe not suited for handguns in service calibers, shotguns, or rifles. Real quick, if you would like to call in and ask us any questions, 1-800-823-8255. No one on the line right now. Anyway, back with Dr. House. Doc, are you still there?
Yes. Perfect. Yes, sir.
All right. I guess to be clear, too, and I think that's something else that maybe people are going to, when they listen to this, miss out on. You're not saying that this is the perfect, absolute best choice for a home defense weapon?
Absolutely not. In fact, it's almost a thing where I'd say all of the scientific data says no.
Right.
But all of the anecdotal data says that it's
perfectly fine.
You know, correct. And now I say that almost all the scientific data, but let's really like condense that down. Now, if you look at the data that guys like one of my good compatriots, Dr. Gary Roberts, Dr. Gary K. Roberts,
right.
Doc GKR, who also incidentally is a hospital dentist, just like me. Most people think that he's an MD. He's not.
Right.
You know, he's the chief wound ballistician for, you know, the United States Special Operations Command. He's a dentist. So
yeah.
I just like to put that in there because people, you know, like to throw around the validity thing. But I'll say that, you know, the data that him and his wound lab have compiled, you know, is about probably, I mean, it's not probably, it is the most empirical source for modern day wound ballistic data.
Right.
And, you know, what they've come up with, you know, is that it is a poor performer.
Right.
A 22 is historically a poor performer. But if you ask anybody that has any practical experience as a cop or as a medic that has seen people that have been shot with 22s, you know, the stories run the gamut from, you know, the guy got shot 5 times in the face. We showed up, he was conscious and alert. We arrested him, he asked for a tissue, he blew his nose, and 5 slugs came out.
Right.
You know, or you see other people where it's like, you know, we couldn't even find an entrance wound, there was no exit wound, and the person was dead, you know,
right there.
5 steps after they left the front porch. So,
yeah.
It, you know, it goes the entire way. And I can say in my own practical experience, working in EMS and then also seeing, you know, postmortem remains, that the, you know, it does have a positive terminal effect.
Yeah.
Will, if you place it correctly, whether it goes into the central nervous system through the head or into the spine or into the heart, it will kill you
right.
with absolute certainty. So, you know, really the crux of the argument just comes down, as we all know, with accuracy and shot placement.
Right.
And yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, if you have the, for example, my setup at home, there is a Ruger 10-22, and there is also an 870 in 12 gauge. So, you know, if things go completely sideways, then I'm going to grab the 870 and, you know, he would have access to the 10-22. So,
right.
But I'm not going to grab the 10-22 over the 870.
No.
You know, if it's me using it. Well, so,
yeah, I mean, it's like my setup at home is an 11.5-inch AR with, you know, 75-grain tap T2 plus a pistol. So, but that having been said, I think that the key point that people miss is that a lot of times, you know, if you think of the traditional home defense gun, that is selected by the shooter of the household that has a certain level of experience and will make their choice based off their personal bias, the level of training they have with a particular firearm, and whatever. And the scary part is, chances are, they're not the ones that will ever have to use that gun. It'll be someone else that's in the house, their spouse, their kid, you know, their elderly mother, whoever it may be. And if you've selected, you know, like you said, a Remington 870 with, you know, double aught buckshot, and your 74-year-old mother needs to use the gun for some reason, well, okay, and that's more what this program is trying to address, correct?
Yeah. I mean, it would be completely, you know, just a backfire of a situation if you know, my mother gets a shot off with the 870, but falls down and breaks her hip and ends up dying of pneumonia in the hospital. Like, nothing was saved there.
Yeah,
you know, that just adds to the problem. But you know, if you look at it the opposite way, that, you know, somebody came in the house forcibly, she shot them 5 times with a 22, and they ran back outside screaming, and, you know,
good
the
enough.
Cops caught them down the street after they chased the blood trail, then mission accomplished.
Well,
mom lives another day, bad guys, you know, either
gone. Right.
Gone or in jail, and the good guys win.
Well, and
so that's the ultimate goal.
Right, and I think that seems to be something else, too, is that, like, if the methy dude kicks down your door, and I threw that in for Greg Elifritz because he's listening right now and commenting
that's
on
right.
Facebook.
That's one of my favorite adjectives.
I know. He told me to get you to say it, but I said it instead. But in all seriousness, though, if the methy dude kicks down your door, a lot of people get hung up on, well, we want to, you know, 22 doesn't kill people enough. And it's like, that's not the point at all. The point is to get them to stop what they're doing. And, and you were talking about Claude Werner at the beginning of the show, and he's actually going to be on the show next weekend, so it'll kind of be 2 weekends in a row of
why 22s are great.
Yeah, pretty much. But it, you know, if you look at the research he's done, it's hard to argue with, just because there are lots of people that have successfully defended themselves with the crappiest guns in existence.
Yeah,
you know, and I want to say it was it was either Morgan Atwood or Ian Wen or one of those guys. But in the After Hours show that we did out at the medical conference, they said, well, you know, Claude's like the crappy gun whisperer. They all work for him for some reason. And I think that's maybe something to bring up, is the problem with 22s is reliability sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of why I narrowed my thesis, if you will, with this to, you know, the three big ones that I know work, which is the, you know, the M&P 1522, you know, AR clone,
right.
The Ruger 10-22 family, you know, be it the takedown or the regular guns or the Marlin Model 60, just because that's what I have used the most. And then I also know that, like, James Yeager uses those Ruger M&P 1522 as rental guns at Tactical Response.
Right.
You know, for high volume rifle classes. So people will shoot 1,500 rounds through that in a weekend, and have, very, very, very few malfunctions.
Right.
Like, I think that he said, like, the most that anybody's ever had was 5, and it was a really dry weekend.
Yeah.
And it was mostly from the follower and the magazine getting bogged down by, silt and just fine dirt.
Yeah, I have to say, I've actually, a couple of my buddies have the 1522s, the Smith & Wesson, the M&P 1522. My dad does. One of my special operations friends has a suppressed one, and those things just run and run and run.
They're great. They're a great, great gun.
Oh yeah. So and Smith & Wesson didn't even pay me any money to say that. So,
right.
But anyway, I guess, and I kind of want to talk about Polypalooza too. We've got Tom on the line. Tom, I'll get to your call at the next segment. If you mind holding the line, that'd be great. In general, though, the statement is your, I'm just going to summarize, is maybe think about who's going to be using the weapon, and if you need to find something that everybody can use, or at least maybe people that are not as able-bodied or not as experienced as the shooter in the household, 22 is a good option if you understand the limitations.
Yep, I agree.
Perfect.
That's it.
All right, so we got about a minute and a half left in this segment, and we'll talk about it some more next segment as well.
Okay.
Amongst the many other things that you do, you're helping to put together with William April the second Polypalooza conference. Do you mind telling people kind of what that is? And then we'll get into some more detail next segment, and then we'll take this call.
Okay. What that is it's a benefit conference that William April and I organized, along with really big help from Greg Ellifritz, Tom Givens, Sal Snark, Craig Douglas. I know I'm going to forget people. And the guys, Michael Gorlick and Tom from Raven Concealment.
Rob Pincus.
And all of these people were, dear friends of Paul before he passed away in June of 2012. And the day that I found out, my kids are friends with his. So, I said, if it was me, I know how I would want to help them. And the best way to do it was to put on a conference like their dad loved. I mean, Paul, if you knew him, traveled. He would hitchhike across the country to go to these conferences. If it was the Mid-Atlantic Tactical Conference or the Rangemaster Polite Society Conference, he would hitchhike to get there. Like, that's how critical of an event this was for him. And I thought, what better way to remember this guy that we all knew and loved by putting on a conference and presenting really odd topics and things that go into greater detail than you might normally get from just a regular ECQC class or, a TDI knife class.
Right.
So very, very specific minutia. And, like I said, if you knew Paul, he was a huge lover of, just specific minutia and trivia.
Right.
So I thought, hey, if we took all this stuff, put it onto some cards, and then said, here, this is what's, why don't you talk about something odd?
Right.
So everybody that presented these things, presents kind of a small wedge of what they normally would do, but it's very specialized and unique.
Right. All right. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. We're talking with Dr. Sherman House now about the Polypalooza 2 conference that is coming up August, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So what are the dates on that, and where is it going to be at?
It is going to be in Garrettsville, Ohio, and it is August 17th and 18th.
So that's a Saturday and Sunday. So I fully expect everybody in the Cincinnati area. It's really, really, really not something you want to miss. It's about a 2.5-hour drive from here. The Raven Concealment facility they've got up there is actually a really cool place. I've been up there a couple times now. You don't even have the entire training cadre finalized yet, do you? And you've already got some big names on there.
Yeah. It's, how these things go. There's always kind of last minute dips and stuff, and then additions. But it's going to be a really great event, and there's going to be you know, a lot of the top names in the industry. And you know, it's a very good way to get exposure to people that you might not get to see right. as easily otherwise.
Right.
When I and it's the 16th and 17th. I'm sorry.
16th and 17th.
16th and 17th of August. Yeah.
See, I probably should have warned you that. Oh wait, I did warn you that I was going to ask about the conference.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. Anyway, it's funny because I actually attended the first one, and that was one. It was probably the first training conference I had ever gone to, and I can I can honestly say if I had not gone to that conference, I wouldn't be doing this show right now. Just the with who I met there, and you know how the weird circumstances and series of events go. I honestly can't see a path to where I'd be where I am right now if I hadn't gone and done that thing. I'm not saying everybody that goes is going to get their own radio show or anything like that. And
sure.
I hope not, because honestly, there are probably people that would do it a lot better than I do it, but still.
They wouldn't.
Oh, I don't know. That's I don't know. But anyway, it should be a really cool thing. I'll be talking about that pretty much every show between now and then, just to make sure people are aware of it. We got a couple callers on the line. Do you mind taking a call or two?
Sure.
All right. We've got Tom from Sharonville, who's been patiently waiting for the last 10 minutes or so. Tom, how are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. And it's interesting to listen to the doctor, because I'm a advocate of what he spoke about. And the reason I say that is I've groundhog hunted and coyote hunted since I was probably 13, 14, and using smaller calibers, and then you go to dissect the animal. Obviously, you don't want to ruin the fur, but when you use a hollow point to actually call in coyotes, which is one of the toughest animals to kill, and you dissect the animal, you're skinning it day after day after day or whatever, you see the damage, and not... But my main point is agreeing with the doctor. If you have a smooth trigger and a light caliber, I've shot with a lot of different friends, police departments, professionals in all different facets, some coming home from military that I waterfowl hunt with and such a thing. When you have a smooth trigger and a light recoil, your chances of putting it right on the dot are very good. And not to make fun of anybody that I shoot with, but when they all have the 45s, 38s, Hydroshocks,
right,
very, very capable calibers, obviously through, you know, through history.
Yeah.
But if you can't hit the spot, it doesn't matter.
And it's actually funny you mentioned that, because I picked up a Glock 42 at the gun show this week. Hey, I found one too, Doc.
Excellent, good.
See, you sent me that text message that you got one, and I was jealous, and I had to go out and be like you.
We can compare notes.
Yeah. But it was funny though, because I posted a photo of it on the Facebook page, and a lot of people were like, "Well, if only it's a 9mm. If only it was a 9mm." Now I own a Smith and Wesson M&P Shield 9mm, and I like that a lot too. But as I pointed out, I was shooting the Glock 380 with my offhand, left-handed, as accurately and as fast with my left hand as I was shooting the 9mm with my right hand. The reason why that's important to me is the Glock 42, for my needs, is just a second or third gun that I may or may not have on me. And I think that something that is lost on a lot of people is that, yes, you can get a more effective caliber in like a small package, but maybe it's not the best choice just because of recoil and follow-up shots, which I think is something that maybe people should consider a little bit more.
And I think that, you know, that kind of also takes into account, you know, one of the things that is kind of one of the cruxes of my whole hypothesis is the matter of accessibility. You know, like if you are able to carry a gun with you, and the only gun that you can manage to hide on you, whether you're wearing, you know, I might wear scrubs one day and I might wear a tuxedo that night.
Right.
So I have to have something that I can cover that whole range with. And I can absolutely do that with something that's in the size envelope of a Shield or a Glock 42. I might not be able to do that with a 17.
Right.
But, you know, I would rather have that gun with me and be extremely proficient with it than, you know, to have something that I can't hide that I am proficient with, but I just can't hide it. So it lowers its accessibility.
Right.
Same thing with this whole hypothesis of the 22 long rifle
yeah.
for defense. You know, it's all a matter of accessibility. If you can use it, it's accessible to you. So
right. So yeah. I mean, Tom, I really appreciate you calling in tonight, and I totally agree.
Could I share one other point?
Sure.
Okay. I traveled for about 2.5 years and came up with a patent on a little coyote hunting product. I used to coyote hunt by myself. Anyway, I won't get into that. But anyway, I got a patent pending, traveled with an archery manufacturer, and you get the best people all over the country, little mom-and-pop shops coming up with great ideas. What was really interesting to me is I would, lunchtime came around, you're standing, talking, trying to sell product, and a lot of times I would talk to a game warden just joking around, you know, about
right.
new laws and what have you. The number one gun confiscated all over the United States was a .22 Magnum, and that's not for an accident.
Yeah.
That is for no reason. It's not because everybody just happens to be stupid in 50 states.
Yeah.
They know something.
Well, I mean, and
now that's a hollow point, not just a regular.
Well, yeah,
solid nose.
And 22 Magnum, that could be an entire different topic. But yeah, I mean, you do see a lot of things, and I will say, especially people that aren't supposed to have guns tend to pick smaller guns to have when they're not supposed to. But hey, Tom, I really do appreciate you calling in tonight.
Thanks for the program, and I agree with the doctor. Start digging in after you shoot an ant. You know, you don't have to hunt, but when you do and you recover your game legally, look and see what the fragments do to that area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, thank you.
Have a good night. So, I actually shot the Glock 42, though. It was funny because I was shooting it some more today and was making headshots with it at about 40 yards on steel, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it's a great pistol.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's funny because I'm known actually for sort of hating 380, but
yeah,
it goes back into that thing where the lesser caliber makes more sense sometimes when you want to ensure hits and things of that nature. So we are coming up on the end of the show. Just real quick, how much is Polypalooza going to run people if they want to go to it?
You know, I'm absolutely not positive on that.
I want to say it was like under $300, wasn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's under $300. I want to say maybe it was like 2.25, but I'm not positive on that.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of training value for the money either way. And when I get those details, I'll put them up on Facebook. Hey, Doc, I really do appreciate you taking your Sunday night and spending it with us. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. So next week, we will actually be talking with the tactical professor, Claude Werner, about actual research and statistics as far as deadly gunfights go. A lot of people say numbers and they pull them out of somewhere, but no one really knows where they come from. We're going to get into that a little bit more in depth. Anyway, remember to check out BallisticRadio.com for past shows. Also, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.